Good morning, I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up after headlines, we'll talk with a transgender pastor from Longmont who is participating in this morning's presidential inaugural prayer service. Then the Iran nuclear deal. We'll hear about a forum on that issue happening later today and about efforts to urge the Biden administration to get the U.S. back into the agreement. John Lendorf talks food on Radio Nibbles. After BBC headlines at 8:30, we bring you a program on the role of personal consumption in addressing global climate disruption. Music begins at 9:30 with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, all made possible by the listener members of KGNU. Thanks, members. In state and local news, Boulder County says they're vaccinating as many eligible people as they can with a limited supply. And outbreaks at schools and universities are back to the lower levels seen before the holiday surge. Steve Miller has this local coronavirus update.
Boulder County has reported 67 new coronavirus cases, but no new deaths. And the county, as of Tuesday, has vaccinated nearly 17,000 residents with the first dose, and 2,500 people are fully vaccinated. Chris Campbell, Boulder County Public Health Emergency Manager and vaccine lead, said that there are 31 vaccine providers in the county who are able to provide 20,000 vaccines weekly, but because of the limited supply, in the last week, there were just 3,500 vaccines given. The Daily Camera reports that people can sign up to receive the vaccine on the county's COVID-19 vaccine website page. Those without internet access can call Boulder County at 720-776-0822 to find vaccine providers. Clinica Family Health, which has 5 clinic locations, offers bilingual and Spanish services. In the state, as of Wednesday, 78 schools serving K-12 students in 8 universities have current coronavirus outbreaks. Most of those outbreaks predate the 12 new outbreaks that occurred in the first 3 weeks of January. The state defines an outbreak as 2 or more cases linked to a place or event. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Meanwhile, the state announced Tuesday that it will close the temporary hospital it set up last year at the Colorado Convention Center. The Colorado Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management says the state's hospital capacity is expected to meet the needs of COVID-19. That's based on modeling data and information from hospitals. 2 other emergency sites in Pueblo and Westminster will remain open. The state converted the convention center to a hospital last April. It had a 2,000-bed capacity, but never treated a single patient. A spokesperson for the State Emergency Management Department told the Denver Post it was an essential insurance policy for the state. Most of Colorado remains under a severe drought, and that is raising concerns about the water supply in Denver. The state's largest water utility, Denver Water, says its reservoir supply is at 78% capacity. That's below normal for January. A spokesperson for the utility told the Post that without adequate spring snow levels, water users may be asked to tighten up on water use this summer. The U.S. Drought Monitor map of Colorado puts most of Denver Water's supply area in the extreme drought category. And the Boulder City Council Tuesday gave final approval to redevelopment of the former Macy's department store. It will be remodeled into a 3-story office building with a small portion of retail space on the first floor. Council voted to accept a $3 million contribution from Macy's to Boulder's Affordable Housing Fund. Developers who do not create affordable housing on site can instead give the city money to use for housing in other locations. And partly cloudy skies today with temperatures in the high 40s, overnight lows in the 20s, continued partly cloudy tomorrow, with highs on Friday in the mid-40s. It's 10 minutes after 8 o'clock at listener-supported KGNU. One of the official inaugural events is the presidential inaugural prayer service It's hosted by the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and includes over 30 faith leaders from around the country, including the Reverend Dr. Paula Stone Williams, co-pastor of the Left Hand Church in Longmont. She joins us now by phone. Hello.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
Glad to be speaking with you. I understand that an interfaith service as part of the presidential inauguration goes back all the way to George Washington. What is the purpose of the event?
The purpose of the event is to help the newly inaugurated president and vice president feel like they can get off to a start by touching base with all the spiritual aspects of American life. And so, yes, it's been a very, very cosmopolitan event for a very long time. I think a lot of people wrongly think that America was founded as a Christian nation, when in fact a lot of our founders were Christians, deists specifically. But on the whole, no, we're a nation that believes in freedom of religion. So to have expressions from Navajos to Muslims to Roman Catholics to post-evangelicals, which is what I am, is a marvelous thing.
And all those faith traditions you just mentioned and more are represented in the 30-some faith leaders who are participating. As you said, freedom of religion, it's enshrined in our Constitution. Although some listeners may be uncomfortable with a prayer service as part of any official event related to elected officials or government, you know, because separation of church and state is supposed to be a central tenet of the nation as well. How do you respond to folks who may be uncomfortable in that way?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons there are 30 of us involved this year, because all we're doing is acknowledging the reality that humans are spiritual, that we are, in fact, a spiritually based species. In fact, it's interesting, when we were evolving, we didn't really take off as a species until we moved beyond the level of blood kin to the level of tribes. And what is it that brought us together as tribes? Interestingly, it's not what we think, which is the need for safety, but it was the need to explain the meaning of life. It was man's search for meaning that brought us together. So that's something we've been doing for a long, long time, for eons. And so to be able to come together with all these different faith expressions, that's, I think, an acknowledgement of who we are as humans, searching for meaning, searching for some meaning in life bigger than our individual selves.
Bishop William Barber II will deliver the homily. He is a voice known to many KGNU listeners, partly as a leader of the Poor People's Campaign. And we have this wide range of faith traditions participating. What form will their participation take? What will you be doing?
I think all of us are either doing a prayer or a reading of scripture, except for Reverend Barber. He's marvelous. I spoke with him at TED Women in 2018 in Palm Springs. And what a force he is for good. But I'll be reading the scripture passage related to his message, which is Isaiah, the 58th chapter, verses 6 to 12. So I'll be reading that passage immediately before he speaks.
I don't know that passage. Can you summarize it?
It's very much a passage about reaching out to those who are in need, about our need to be concerned for the oppressed, to be open to the stranger, to the foreigner, our need to care for our own while also caring for all others. So it's really quite a majestic and, I think, important passage for these next 4 years.
You described yourself as a post-evangelical earlier. What is that?
Well, I am a Christian, certainly, and have been a part of a Christian. I've been a pastor. I'm older than dirt, so I've been a pastor for a very long time. Our church comes out of an evangelical perspective, but we would not be nearly as theologically narrow as most evangelical churches are. Our theology would look a lot more like mainline Protestantism, but our style as an independent church and with very contemporary music and a focus on a certain type of worship style that I think appeals to a lot of people, that's what makes us post-evangelical. So in our particular church, we've got all kinds of people on the theological spectrum, from those who identify as Christian, those who identify as mainline, as Roman Catholic, as evangelical, post-evangelical. And you know, we want to be a place where we all can work together to just try to figure out the spiritual journey.
And
there aren't many of us around. There may be 100 churches in the nation at this point that would identify as post-evangelical. Virtually all of us are coming out of an evangelical background. But none of us really are comfortable with the directions evangelicalism has gone, particularly in the last 4 years, since even in this last election, 75% of the evangelical population voted for Donald Trump.
How do you hope Joe Biden will be different from Donald Trump when it comes to spirituality and values and how that may manifest in his presidency?
Well, his spirituality is a part of his core. He talked about wanting to do this job from his soul. And his soul has always been apparent, on display, all the parts of him. And so I expect it to be broadly focused on increasing the opportunities for every American, and particularly focused on groups that have not been focused on in a positive way over the last 4 years. I'm a part of the LGBTQ community, as many members of our church are. And as a transgender woman, over the last 4 years, it's been very, very difficult as more and more of our rights were questioned and in some cases taken away. There are 28 states right now in the United States that have some kind of legislation pending to take away transgender rights. So to have someone who just yesterday appointed an assistant secretary of health, a nominee who's trans and who has been leading that department in Pennsylvania, to have two of us who are transgender in the program tomorrow, to have six of us out of the LGBTQ plus community tomorrow, you know, that means that I think our community is going to have a much better experience over the next 4 years. And I think that's particularly going to be even more true for Black and Brown Americans.
I hear optimism in your voice, and there is cause for optimism for many people with this change in administration. But we still are in a very challenging time, not the least of which because of the pandemic. What do you counsel people?
You know, I think it's a time for us to be patient and, God, please, to work together. You know, our church has not been able to meet live since are in person since last March. We meet on Facebook every Sunday at 5 p.m. And that's not what any of us would like. We have about 1,000 viewers every week, and they're scattered all over the world. But we all, certainly those of us who are local, would love to be able to get together again. And so we just say to everyone, just a little bit longer. And I don't understand the level of polarization that we see in our nation today. What I do know is people do change their minds, but they don't change their minds unless information comes to them in a non-threatening way. And so I hope that we are able to reach out to those who are frightened of us and help them understand that we're all in this together. We're all just working together to try to make a difference.
Paula Stone Williams is co-pastor at the Left Hand Church in Longmont, and she'll be one of about 30 faith leaders participating in the presidential inaugural prayer service this morning. You can watch that and other inaugural events online. That's BidenInaugural.org. It's 18 minutes after 8 at listener-supported KGNU. In 2015, Iran reached agreement with the U.S. and several other countries to dismantle its nuclear program and permit extensive inspections in exchange for billions of dollars of sanctions against the country being dropped. It was hailed at the time as a landmark agreement. But the Trump administration pulled the U.S. out in 2018, and last year, Iran resumed some of its nuclear activities. Now, President Biden is being urged to get back into the deal, and that's the topic of an online forum happening later today. It's sponsored by the University of Denver's Center for Middle East Studies and by Coloradans for Middle East Diplomacy and Peace, a local grassroots advocacy group. We spoke with one of their organizers, Sarah Avery.
The Biden administration has signaled their willingness to re-enter on a compliance-for-compliance basis into the Iran nuclear deal, and Iran's leadership has also signaled that desire. And so we have a fairly short timeline to re-enter compliance with the deal because Iran has presidential elections coming in June. And so that presidential election may very well be the end of our hope for a return to the deal in its current form. So we really need to act on this fast once the Biden administration comes into office in a couple days. What we're really looking for is a return to the deal as it was when we pulled out of it in 2018. The pullout from the Trump administration side of the deal really has made us all less safe. Our allies in the region, our forces in the region, ordinary Iranians and our country. And so really, the reason we want to see a return to the deal now is that it was making us less safe. Not only did it shrink wrap Iran's nuclear program, put it under lock, key, and camera 24/7, which made us safer, but it also brought down tensions in the region. And in fact, when Iran and the U.S. were in full compliance with the deal before the Trump administration withdrew us, there was not a single Iranian proxy attack on U.S. foreign U.S. forces in the region. So we really want to return to that safety and then use the return to the deal as it was in 2018 to use that as a jumping off point for follow-on negotiations for other concerns and conflicts that we have with Iran, such as regional security and human rights issues.
The Israeli government under Benjamin Netanyahu had been supportive of the Trump administration's efforts to pull out of the deal. How does that factor in?
Well, that conflict has certainly always been there. And what's interesting is that just as we have internal conflicts in our own politics here in the U.S., so does Israel. And actually, Israeli security forces and intelligence forces all the way along were actually supportive of the Iran nuclear deal, seeing that it actually made Israel less safe, or it would make Israel more safe to be in the deal. And so, you know, we certainly support those security forces within Israel saying that. The same is true of American intelligence and security professionals saying that the deal really makes us more safe. And so we really applaud the Biden administration for listening to all of those experts and seeing the evidence that we had while the deal was in force, that it really makes us all safer.
So for the average listener, the average Colorado resident, how does it make us safer to re-enter into this deal? And what points of leverage do average folks have if they want to encourage that?
The first reason it makes us safer is that it lessens the likelihood that we will go to another devastating war in the Middle East. We certainly have many service members here in Colorado and their families that would be affected by our going to another war. We have 10 to 15,000 Iranian Americans living here in the Denver Boulder metro area, and they and their families are affected, and their loved ones back in Iran would be affected by another war. So really, the choice is very clear, and we can see in this time since the Trump administration pulled us out that the choice really is being in this non-proliferation agreement or war. Eventual war. And so the reason it makes us safer first is that we will not be going to war, and we will have more stability and security in the Middle East, and we will not be spending more needless funds on another devastating war. And what ordinary Coloradans can do is to reach out to our members of Congress, our senators and their House rep, to tell them that they want them to proactively support the Biden administration's commitment to returning to the deal on a compliance for compliance basis.
Tell us a little bit about the forum happening Thursday and how folks can participate.
Absolutely. So this is a Zoom forum, as everything is going these days, at 5:30 p.m. Mountain this Thursday, the 21st. And it's called The Iran Nuclear Deal in a Rapidly Changing Middle East, co-hosted by our grassroots coalition and the Center for Middle East Studies at DU. So it will be facilitated by the Center for Middle East Studies director, Dr. Nader Hashemi, and it will feature international experts, really, from the Quincy Institute, Trita Parsi, from the Atlantic Council, Barbara Slavin, from the Friends Committee on National Legislation, Hassan El-Tayeb, and from J Street, Dylan Williams. These experts will come together and discuss why it's so important for us to re-enter the deal right now. They will discuss what led to the deal, the consequences, and what we've seen from our U.S. withdrawal from it, and what the future of Iran policy looks like in this rapidly changing time in the Middle East.
That's Sarah Avery, one of the organizers of today's forum, The Iran Nuclear Deal in a Rapidly Changing Middle East. It's today at 5:30, and you can find out more at Coloradans for Middle East Peace and Diplomacy on Facebook. And we also have a link to that on the Morning Magazine page on KGNU's website, kgnu.org. It's 26 minutes after 8 now at listener-supported community radio. Time for Radio Nibbles.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Time for Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf, with us from his home kitchen in Louisville, and it's his favorite time of year, folks. Yes, John, National Pie Day is upon us.
Yes, and every 4 years we call it the Pie-nauguration. National Pie Day was created in Boulder, and it's the only national food holiday that was really born in Colorado.
How did it happen?
It goes back to 1975. Charlie Papazian was a school teacher in Boulder. He liked to celebrate his birthday, January 23rd, by having pie instead of cake. And so he turned it into a project with the kids, and he said, I'm going to declare my birthday National Pie Day. It was just kind of a goofy, cool thing that he did. And then he registered it with the organization that was doing that at the time. And ever since then, people have celebrated pie on January 23rd. There's another day in March that people celebrate too, but that's about math, not pastry. You know.
The 14th of March, different thing.
So Charlie went on to become the godfather of the craft brew renaissance in America, and very famous in the beer world, but really, he's pie.
So what happens on National Pie Day, particularly in this current year when we can't get together?
If you go online, there are National Pie Day events happening all over the country. What I decided to do was to gather everybody for a National Pie Day Zoom. It's at 3:00 on National Pie Day on Saturday. And what we're going to do is get together and eat pie. I hope everybody will make a pie. And we're going to have some pie music live from the East Coast, and folks showing off the pies that they've made. And I also want to talk about the kind works that you can do with pie.
Give us an example.
I'll give you an example. If I showed up at your house with a pie.
Which you did.
I did. And
that was great.
And that's all it is. It makes people so happy. And pie is meant to be shared. And there's a lot of people who do pie it forward. Basically, they go to a bakery and say, I want to give a pie to these people because they're doing good works.
Well, if people want to join the Zoom gathering or find out more, what's the best way for them to do that, John?
The easiest way is to join my new Facebook group. It's called the Global Pie Society. It's easy to find. Facebook.com/PieKind. And then there's posts on there for the National Pie Day Zoom gathering. You can also email me at radionibbles@kgnu.org, and I can get you a Zoom invitation.
What's the best thing you've tasted lately?
You know, I love it when I get to taste somebody's cooking besides mine, and I was gifted with some sushi, spider roll, miso soup, and a few other things from AOI Sushi in North Boulder. And it was just wonderful. So I really enjoyed it.
The gift of sushi, almost as good as the gift of pie, I guess.
Almost.
All right. Well, happy Pie Day, John, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Happy baking, everyone.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
John Lendorf from the Global Pie Society. He talks about food every Thursday morning here on the magazine. It's 8:30 at listener-supported KGNU. In just a few minutes, we have a program that looks at the connection between personal consumption and global climate disruption. And of course, our day of music starts at 9:30 on the Morning Sound Alternative, all still to come this morning. Another great day of community radio. Thanks for tuning in.